Following another night of riots in city centers across America, soybean futures are leading strength in the grains. Wheat, however, just doesn't want to come along for the ride. Cattle and feeder cattle are lower, but hog prices are trying to work higher as the market tries to figure out if China buyers are in or out.
Live from unprecedented times than have ever precedented before, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin the show with a chat with Dr. Jim Minter from Purdue University. Then it's National Pork Producers Council VP Nick Giordano. And then we welcome longtime friend of the show, the good professor himself, Dr. Jim Smith. And right after the news, Annalisa Laca updates us from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much, man. What a perfect time to have Nick Giordano on with all the confusion over what is going on with China. If anybody's got the right perspective for what is going on with China's purchase plans, it's Nick. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking forward to the conversation with him. Leading up to that, we've got Jim Minter back on talking about the barometer and a little bit of improvement there. So we'll find out how, why, and how much improvement.
Last month was a real bummer for the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer. Yikes.
Yes, it was. And then Jim Smith. It is so fortunate. We're just so fortunate to have a listener like Jim Smith, who has been listening for since day one, since we started
the whole time
6 years ago, that is so knowledgeable about nutrition and the supply chain of some of the feedstuffs that are required across the country, and he's going to share some of that knowledge with us. And it's going to be interesting to have a conversation with him about that maintenance ration and just how well it works and how long those hogs can be put on hold as we try to get the slaughterhouses back up to full capacity.
Yeah, and Twitter, he was right at the front edge of talking about that. How are we going to slow these hogs down? So it'll be great to talk to him.
Absolutely.
Let's get to the news here. Why don't we start with some highlights? USDA's crop progress and condition update for the week ending May 31st, 2020. Corn is 93% planted, 78% emerged, 74% rated good to excellent. Soybeans are 75% planted, 52% emerged, 70% good to excellent. On the spring wheat side, 91% is planted with 67% emerged. 80% of the spring wheat crop is rated good to excellent. Here comes cotton, 66% planted, 8% squaring, 44% good to excellent. And finally, winter wheat is 77% headed, 3% harvested, and 51% of that crop is rated good to excellent. Chip, is for the corn, we're at 93% planted. Is the 100 number actually just coming down rather than the planted acreage going up right now?
I think there's absolutely some truth to that, Davis. When you look at what's going on up in North Dakota in particular, they got to 75% planted as of May 31. That might be as much progress as we are going to see out of North Dakota. Although, you know, their last plant date is May 25, and as of May 24, they were at 54%. So they added 21 points.
Okay.
A lot of that had to come after May 25. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe they weren't as quick to pull the pin as we thought they were going to be.
Well, Chip, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office now believes it could take a decade for the economy to recover from pandemic-related woes. The agency said output is not expected to catch up to a previously forecast level until the fourth quarter of 2029. The sharp contraction triggered by the coronavirus caused it to mark down its 2020 through 2030 forecast for U.S. economic output by a cumulative $7.9 trillion, or 3% of GDP relative to its January projections. The agency said stimulus measures will only, quote, partially mitigate the deterioration in economic conditions. The CBO expects U.S. GDP to be 5.6% smaller in the fourth quarter of 2020 compared to the same time last year. The forecasts for the recovery just continue to stretch, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things I want to have a conversation with Jim Mintert about. We'll get to that in the next segment.
Yep. Well, and as you said, cities across the United States faced another night of violent protests. President Trump called for a tougher government response to the violent unrest and said he's ordering thousands of armed soldiers and law enforcement officers to the nation's capital. The Associated Press describes at least 9 people confirmed killed as a result of violence across the country since the protests began 8 days ago. Chip.
Yeah, this is it's unbelievably unfortunate. And the brother of George Floyd has come out now and said, listen, if you're rioting, you are not doing so in the name of my brother. I think that is going to, hopefully that will take some of the willingness of those rioters away.
Yeah. And I don't know. I'm conflicted because my wife and I were at, we'll skip this next story here. My wife and I were out to eat last night. And they had a news outlet on the television, but it was muted so we could read the closed captions. I saw Trump come out and give that speech. I saw them clear the protesters to the side and him cross the street to have his photo taken in front of that church. I feel like for him, he needed to do that. Yeah. Maybe I'm way off, but he needed to say, look, I will go outside. I will reclaim this territory for law and for order. Right. Even if it was just to go out and take a picture, and the criticism of that action, just it's upsetting to me. I'm going to leave it at that.
Thank you for saying it, because it is upsetting, and it's off
base.
It was
immediate too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's off base. Just to call it a photo opportunity in front of the church is wrong.
It was a bold move.
Meaning in his actions, and it was to reclaim. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Annalisa Laca. Annalisa is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. You know, Annalisa, it's pork week here on AgriTalk, but it's dairy month, isn't it?
It is, yes. So we kicked off dairy month yesterday with World Milk Day, and we'll be celebrating dairy farmers and dairy products throughout June.
All right. So what kind of promotions can we expect?
So there are several of the co-ops that are doing, virtual social media promotions. Like DFA has a campaign where if you post something with their hashtag, they're donating a certain number of dollars per post to local food banks. Land O'Lakes gave $15,000 to the National 4-H Association. So helping, kids there and doing some projects like that. And then also just dairy farmers. I think that we'll see increase social activity from dairy farmers, just sharing their stories and sharing what it's like to live on a farm, which is great.
Yep. Very cool. Sounds like your daughter's got a story to tell now too.
Oh my goodness. Yes. My 3-year-old, she just turned 3 in May, got her first Jersey calf yesterday. My husband's friend, who has no children, obviously by the fact that he thought a bottle cap was an appropriate 3rd birthday present, gave it to her, and she loved it. She named it Orange, and she is very, very happy about it.
Well, that is awesome. That's such a good thing for her. And you too, Annalisa.
Mom's not excited to bottle feed. So.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Annalisa. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Chip. Bye.
All right. We got Jim Mintert from Purdue Ag up next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by ClaraFly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This special edition of AgriTalk is supporting Pork Week, paying tribute to pork producers who bring lean and nutrient-rich pork to your table. Coverage brought to you by Merck, PIC, United Animal Health, Alltech Hubbard, and Hypor. Learn more at porkbusiness.com.
A wonderful, magical animal.
Bacon.
I want sausages!
Yes, thank you to all the sponsors of Pork Week. You know, Davis, we talked about brat patties yesterday. I couldn't help
we
it.
We did, yeah. The sliced bread of pork. Time. Yeah.
Yes.
You'd had some?
I had to.
That's outstanding. Absolutely.
You talked about it. And while I was there, I picked up another one of my favorites that we haven't talked about.
And what's that?
A ham steak.
Oh, a ham steak. That always goes down easy. Yeah.
Oh, man. Not only is it good on the first turn, but you've got to keep some leftovers behind for that sandwich the next day.
Because that sandwich you maybe chop it into small little pieces and you fry those little pieces up and you put a fried egg over the top of them.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, howdy. Now you got breakfast for the whole day. You're good to go on that.
That's right. All right, let's have a conversation about the ag economy now. Dr. James Mintert, Purdue ag economist and the director for the Center of Commercial Ag there at Purdue. He joins us right now. Jim, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Very good. Good to be on the show again, Chip.
You bet. Glad that you're here because there is a little bit of improvement to talk about in the ag barometer. What are the numbers?
Well, the barometer itself rose 7 points, and that's about a 7% increase. So the reading was 103 this month versus 96 last month. That still leaves us down well over 40% compared to where we were back in February, because in February the reading was at an all-time high of 168. So, you know, the good news is it looks like it's stabilized is kind of how I characterize it. It's a small improvement, but really kind of a stabilization and a little bit of a breather. And I think part of that might have been related to the fact that the week we collected data, which was the week of May 18th through 22, that was when USDA released the details on the CARES Act payments. And I suspect that that might have had a little positive influence and maybe made people feel just a little bit better about things.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. You mentioned that all-time high that was set in February at 168, and then, of course, the trap door opened, and the bottom fell out of this, out of not just the ag economy, but the economy in general. And I got to believe that concern over consumers' ability to spend some money, Jim, has got to be playing a role in a generally negative attitude out there.
Well, I think that's true. I do think it's interesting, though. The University of Michigan released their consumer sentiment survey, I think, last week. And it was the results were kind of similar to ours. They showed a small improvement in consumer sentiment as well. So in both cases, the broader U.S. economy, consumer sentiment plunged from the February-January levels to the lows put in there in April. We did the same thing in the ag sector. Now that we've plummeted, now people are kind of stepping back and maybe reassessing things a little bit. And, of course, the broader economy is starting to open up a little bit. That's creating a little bit of a positive vibe. And I think that spilled over into the ag side, and maybe that plus the impact of the CARES Act details coming out were probably the two drivers. And, of course, the other thing you always look at this time of year is, you know, what's taking place with respect to planting progress.
Right.
One of the interesting things in the data this month was that the reading for May of this year was almost the same as the reading for May of last year.
Really?
The difference being, of course, that last year that was the low point for the year. And, of course, that was driven by the fact that we couldn't get crops planted. We couldn't get in the field because of wet weather conditions. This year, completely different set of circumstances. This year, crop planting has gone pretty well for most parts of the country. So we have a different set of circumstances there. It's really more about income and prices, ability to market livestock, for example.
Yep.
So, you know, it's a lot of interesting stuff going on there, obviously.
Right, right. Okay, let's talk about the three components that make up the barometer. The current conditions, what was the change there?
So the current condition index was the driver primarily of the improvement in the barometer. The index of current conditions actually rose 11 points. The index of future expectations rose about 4 points.
Okay.
So the driver was more along the lines of we think things are a little better right now than the expected improvements. However, I do have to say that when you compare the two indices, people remain more optimistic about the future than they are current conditions, right? Current condition index is still well below the index of future expectations. So we still have that reality going on, that kind of vibe in the background, people thinking things a year from now, things are going to be quite a bit better than they are today.
Right. Right. Okay. What's the level of concern about when we think about the future expectations? What are the revenue expectations out there right now, Jim? Because, boy, when you mentioned the livestock guys, they're happy to move hogs at a loss right now. And when you're happy to take a loss as long as you can move hogs, your revenue expectations are pretty low.
Well, that's right. And I think one of the questions we asked this month was, and it's a question we've been using periodically ever since we started the survey back in 2015, is do you think farmers' equity position will improve, diminish, or stay about the same over the next 12 months? And there's been a radical change there. Back in February, 28% of the people in our survey said they thought equity was going to decline, meaning wealth was going to go down over the next 12 months. When we asked the same question in May, 61% of the people in our survey, 61 of the farmers in our survey said they expected to see equity go down. And that tells the story. People are braced for what's going to be a really tough year. And to put it in perspective, we mentioned a minute ago that the results for the barometer this month were similar to what we saw in May of last year. That 61% is actually worse than what we saw last year at this time. Last year in May, when people were very negative about what was going on in ag, 55% said they expected to see equity decline in 2019. Now we're at 61%. So people are telling us this is actually a little worse than it was a year ago.
Yeah, yeah. Which I got to believe if we're looking at that many farmers that expect their equity position to decline, I would also guess then that there's high expectations of government outlays, right?
Well, there is. And I think, one of the things we asked this month was, do you think it'll be necessary for the president and Congress to pass another bill to provide more economic assistance to farmers? And by another bill, we meant beyond the CARES Act. Two-thirds said yes. And so there is an expectation of that. And I guess the other thing that we didn't actually ask this month, but, and we didn't have the details, but as you look at the, particularly on the crop side, when you look at the CARES Act, and the payments are going to be substantial, but they're probably not going to be, they're not going to be as big as what we received under the Market Facilitation Program.
Okay.
That had a huge impact in both 18 and 19 in terms of farm revenue and net farm income. The CARES Act is going to provide a very big boost, but it's probably for crop producers not going to be as big as what we saw from the MFP program. So it's a challenging environment, and people recognize that. And, a lot of people, I think, are still sorting it out. I think one of the things we talked about when we did our own write-up of the barometer this month, we were debating, how many people have really sat down at this stage and done a pro forma update. In other words, have they really assessed where they're at financially? A lot of people probably haven't had a time to do that, particularly crop producers. They've been busy working in the field. We go forward here another 30 or maybe 60 days, people will start to assess that and maybe start to get a better grip on where their financials are really at right now. And so we're going to continue to ask that question, some of these financial questions, and get a little better read on that as we go through the summer.
Okay, good, good. Okay, CBO was out with a report yesterday saying that it could take a decade for the economy to recover from the pandemic and the shutdown. Where are we in the recovery for the ag economy, Jim?
Oh, that's a tough question. The decade projection sounds too long to me for agriculture. Agriculture, of course, is a more volatile sector of the U.S. ag economy than some of the other sectors of the broader economy. So in some respects, we're kind of used to some volatility there.
Yeah.
But as you think about it, the key drivers for the ag economy from a long-run perspective, we're an economic powerhouse when it comes to exports. And so trade is incredibly important to the ag sector.
Yeah.
So if you want to think about what's going to happen, good or bad, to the ag sector over the next 5 or 10 years, I think a lot of it hinges on what takes place on the trade front.
Excellent.
Obviously, domestic demand is important, but that export demand component is huge for U.S. agriculture.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about that next. Thanks, Jim. That is Jim Mintert from Purdue Ag. We've got Nick Giordano up next.
AgriTalk is sponsored by PIC. Let their team be a resource or simply a sounding board dedicated to bringing you the best genetics today and tomorrow. PIC, never stop improving.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, we got a big move going on in soybeans. What's going on?
Well, yesterday, Chip, there was a lot of confusion over whether China's state-owned firms were going to buy or not going to buy, and it ended up with rumors that they did purchase some soybeans, and we had two of those cargoes confirmed this morning for USDA for new crop delivery. So that's given us some support. We've pushed through the 50-day moving average in July soybean futures for the first time since mid to late January. That's given us some technical support as well, and you add it all up and you end up with double-digit gains here mid-morning.
All right, the little spillover support over to corn, but wheat's suffering here this morning.
Yeah, corn's kind of taken on a mixed tone here mid-morning because of the weakness in the wheat market pulling down, the strength in corn pulling up, and so some of the early strength in the corn market has faded a little bit, and like I said, trading with a narrowly mixed tone now. Wheat just struggling and find buyers. You know, this isn't the right time of year with harvest winter wheat crops starting up for the market to find much support unless there's something really bullish out there.
Gotcha. Mixed trade and lean hogs.
Yeah, the back end of the market showing a little bit of strength, but June hogs are under heavy pressure. We've now got the July contract dipping just below unchanged. So quite a bit of spread there between the front month and the back end of that market this morning. On the cattle side of things, we're facing moderate to heavy pressure in some of the nearby contracts, both live cattle and feeder cattle. A little bit lighter selling in the back end of that market.
All right, good stuff. Brian is going to be on the second hour of AgriTalk this afternoon, along with Jeff Wilson from Pro Farmer. Thank you, Brian. We'll talk to you later.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and Pork Week. Wow, I expected like bacon sizzling or something there, Davis, and nothing.
Did you?
When I
nothing.
Hit you with
nothing.
The big pork week.
I'm just too excited. Pork week. Let's see, what do we got here? Just a hog, maybe. I don't know.
That's nice. That's nice. All right, let's talk trade. We've got Nick Giordano. He is the VP and counsel for Global Government Affairs for the National Pork Producers Council. He joins us right now. Nick, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks very much for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for making time. How are things in Washington, D.C. this morning?
Well, they're pretty hectic, but yeah. They're hectic in the hog industry. They're hectic in D.C., and so it's keeping us busy.
Absolutely. Okay. Let's start with the headline item, and that is China and the tensions between the White House and Beijing and how it's spilling over into trade, and yesterday's rumors that the government-owned trade agencies were told to put a halt on soybeans and pork purchases. Nick, what's the status there?
Well, we have not heard of a single canceled order.
Okay.
That's not to say it's not possible, but we've heard absolutely no bad news. So I woke up yesterday morning to a couple news accounts, but no problem. And I'll tell you, the last time we had a warning sign like this, we had some actual orders canceled on March 10th. March turned out to be maybe the best month we've ever had shipping pork to China. So they're really short pork. I can't speculate, but so far so good.
Okay. Yeah, they are really short on pork. There's no question about that, but the situation with Hong Kong is this issue feels different than talking about tariffs and intellectual property rights and so on, Nick. This feels, because we are talking about human rights, the Hong Kong situation seems more desperate, I guess. Am I off base on that?
No. And I think if you look back at what's been going on between the U.S. and China, really since before President Trump was elected, it's not been good. So, you know, our hope, obviously, in the hog industry is that the two countries work hard to reconcile their differences, get closer together. But look, things have been and are going the wrong way. And there's just a long list of things over the past few years. A lot of people in the hog industry have been and continue to be very concerned about the future of, our ability as a country to be able to supply China. On the one hand, it's right now was always a great sales opportunity for us, but with 50% of their hogs out of production because of ASF, It's truly the greatest single sales opportunity in the history of the pork industry. Yeah. On the other hand, the geopolitical signs point to our red flashing lights. Yeah. So it's tough. There's a lot, talk about a double whammy, the uncertainty of China and the uncertainty of COVID. And this is an unprecedented disaster we're having in the U.S. hog industry right now.
Yeah. Yes, it certainly is. No question about that. And we need some financial assistance for hog producers out there from some additional assistance, I should say. And it's included in the HEROES Act. Can it be carved out of there, Nick?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I mean, the HEROES Act has zero chance of becoming law. It's a Democratic bill. Republicans aren't going to go along with it, just like the Dems wouldn't go along with a totally Republican bill. But politics is the art of compromise. And I think we of course, our members, our staff, leadership, talking to a lot of people on the Senate side, and they realize that the provisions largely crafted by Chairman Peterson are really good. Good for the livestock sector, good for agriculture. So, yeah, it's our number one priority. We appreciate what Congress and, the administration did on the CARES Act, but it's not enough. This is an unprecedented disaster in hog farming.
Yeah. Yeah, and getting to the other side of it has got to be priority one for a lot of the producers out there. And unfortunately, the only way that some of the producers are going to get to the other side of this is if we get – that the government assistance out there is as really as quickly as we can, right? This isn't something that we can look back at 6 months from now and say, well, you know what? They did get hurt. We need to get that assistance in their hands now.
Well, we needed it in their hands yesterday.
Yes.
And it's just, our staff, our board, our leadership has just been consumed with this, and our mission is to keep as many people in the industry as possible. And we know, nobody's going to be made whole, not by any stretch of the imagination. And we know it's probably not possible to keep everybody in the sector, but our mission is to keep as many people in hog farming as possible. And it's tough. And if that doesn't happen, we'll have contraction. long term. You know, you'll have higher consumer prices, probably a more concentrated industry. So, and we're so I think that argument's really helped with the payment limitations and the, you know, producer payments. We're trying to get both compensation for euthanized animals. Unfortunately, we have two streams of animals, those that can make it into the food supply and those that unfortunately have to be euthanized. So for the euthanized hogs, we're trying to get some value to producers. For the hogs that make it into the food supply, we're trying to get producer payments. And I think we and other folks in other sectors of agriculture have been arguing, and Congress has understood this. You know, this is hitting large, medium, and small. And, you know, if you limit the payments, you're going to necessarily, you're going to have some contraction and concentration probably. So we're making those arguments. Congress, has not put payment limitations on. I think part of the problem with USDA is it's not enough money. And there's so much demand, they got to limit it somehow. And payment limits have been, they've been historically used. That's easy for them. But we're trying, what we like a lot about this House bill is not only that it provides for value of value of euthanized animals, but no payment limits for direct payments. So that's right. That's important to us.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'll admit, you're not going to hear me say that very often, Nick, where moving away from the payment limits makes sense. But in this case, I don't know any other way around it. Hey, Nick, I want to do an evaluation real quick, and I'm going to switch gears on you. But let's do an evaluation of USMCA. How are things stand on trade and pork trade between the U.S. and Mexico?
Well, pretty good. Our seems like the past few years has been a whirlwind. I mean, one of the things that we didn't have that a lot of sectors, not so much in ag, but a lot of the sectors in the economy went into this whole COVID thing with strong, winds at their back with a really good 2018, 2019. We were supposed to have a good 2018, 2019, but trade retaliation, not just China, but we had a 20% tariff on Mexico that was a killer. So that was our top issue for a while, to get those punitive tariffs and retaliation for metal off. So we took a step back there for a while. We never made we never ever opposed USMCA.
Right.
That would have been not smart. We're fully supportive. Thank goodness those tariffs are off and that North American metal issue is resolved. And we're doing okay. Our exports are good globally. Of course, China's skewing everything. We got about 10-12% of our production going to China now. And Japan was a big problem because of the CPTPP. We U.S. was left behind. We were losing market share there. So that's a success story as well. So exports have been pretty good. In fact, coming into this year, the analysts were saying the average pork producer was going to make a profit of $10 per animal.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, because of COVID, now the number we've been using is a number Steve Meyer and Dermot Hayes worked up based on March 10th to April 10th of a collective $5 billion industry loss, $37 loss per animal. I know talking to some producers, they're losing $60, $70 per animal right now. It's crazy. So, Mexico's okay. And we're, as staff, we got to not just be about COVID. We're focused on everything from Proposition 12 and keeping African swine fever out and USMCA. So it is going to get implemented. We got what we wanted, which was a continuation of zero tariff trade. It's got an enhanced SPS section. We're happy with it, and we think Mexico, has been in the past a good market, and going forward it should be.
Nick, thank you so much for your time. So appreciated. Thank you.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and Pork Week here on AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory, and Nick, boy, he used every second of the last segment to get the information out there. But big thank you to Nick Giordano, VP and Counsel of Global Government Affairs for the National Pork Producers Council, for coming on and really, you know, just running down the priority list is what he did. We could have talked for another half hour because I mean, I wanted to get to the opportunity with the UK and so on, but we'll have to have Nick on again later and find out what the situation is there. Okay, let's talk swine nutrition. Jim Smith, Dr. Jim Smith, the good professor from Kent Feeds, farmer over in Indiana. He joins us right now. Jim, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm great, Chip. How are you?
Doing fine, doing fine. What you doing today?
We're trying to finish planting soybeans.
Excellent, excellent. Did you get your corn all planted?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
We got lucky with some rains to get the crust off, and I don't think we'll have much replant.
Good. Good, good, good. Yeah, I knew that you were running into an issue there too. So, all right, man. I want to talk about swine nutrition with you and how things have changed over the decades and how we're doing things to put a consistent, high-quality product in the meat case. But I also want to talk about COVID and the influence of COVID on the availability of some of these products, Jim. Even before we get to the maintenance ration that a lot of hogs are, or some hogs are on right now, some of the feedstuffs were running short.
Oh, definitely. Well, we had a double whammy when it came to distillers. You know, the challenges we had in 2019 with the profitability in the ethanol market,
yep.
And then Putin and Saudi Arabia having their fight, and you know what happened to the ethanol market. Well,
yep.
The unintended consequence for my customers were the lack of availability distillers grains. So that was the first hit for us.
Mm-hmm. How much of a market is that in the hog? Because, you know, Jim, it seems like when people want to talk about distillers grains and DDGs, it's more of a focus on cattle and dairy than it is on hogs. But it makes up a good portion of the ration.
Well, I'd say in 2018, 75 to 80% of the pigs in the country had distillers in their diets.
That's
so it's a significant ingredient for the swine industry.
Right, right. What about any other ingredients? Was there a disruption in the supply of any other ingredients?
Well, when COVID hit, mm-hmm. we started shutting down flour mills or cutting back on flour mills, so that backed up the availability of wheat mids.
Yep.
When we hit the challenge of the packing plants, you couldn't find any soybean hulls because we're using that in holding rations that we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. We did have some slowdowns in some ingredients coming out of China. Some vitamin supplies got a little tight. We didn't run out, but they got a little tight. We were running on some just-in-time inventory. So it's been a challenge for the entire feed industry to make sure that we're providing a nutritious feed for our livestock.
Right, right. Okay, this maintenance ration, what is it? How's it work?
Well, plain and simple, we try and get pigs to stop growing. And
yeah.
I graduated from Kansas State in 1998, and I never thought in my life I would start and stop a pig from growing.
Yep.
But we've been doing it this spring.
That's crazy. What is it,
so Jim?
I keep hearing that it's a lot more corn than anything.
Well, it's just like a lot of things in agriculture. There's not one straight answer.
Okay.
What we figured out with the research that we've done at the K-State or the Kent Research Farms is that if we feed a diet that has either just corn, a premix, and about 20 pounds of methionine, we can cut a pig's growth weight back to like between a half and a three-quarters of a pound.
Okay.
If we take that same ration and we put a little bit of soybean meal in it, so we get a little more total amino acid package, we can maintain growth at about a pound per day. Now, your feed efficiency goes to heck, but you've slowed down those pigs, And the thing that we've discovered with the research is that those pigs were maintained their composure. They weren't wild, banging at the feeders, hungry pigs. Okay. They just weren't eating.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, and that obviously is so important. How long can you put a pig on hold?
Well, we just shipped our first load of pigs that were supposed to go 35 days ago, and we maintained that entire group of pigs at 1 pound per day. And that included pigs that were on a control ration that were gaining 2 pounds per day. So we had some pigs in that group that weren't gaining very much.
Yeah, you sure did. You sure did.
Well, there's some other things that we could do with feeds. Iowa State's done some good work in some individual pigs looking at high-fiber diets, some calcium chloride. What we've discovered with the high-fiber diets with wheat mids or soybean hulls is that the pig just eats more. It's just like you and me sitting down and having a salad. We'll just fill up on it.
Okay. So. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. So, you know, Jim, this is such a challenging time. I'm sure that you're out there. It's got to be challenging for you, too, because you're seeing what these guys are going through. Just keep up the good work. Keep being the good partner that I know you are to a lot of hog producers out there, Jim.
Well, we're trying. I know we've got stress from COVID, and now we got stress from the hog markets, and it's a lot of stress going around. Yep.
There certainly is. Keep in touch, and stay active out there on Twitter, because I sure rely on what you put out there to keep us up to speed on what's going on in this hog industry and in the feed markets too. So thank you so much, Jim. We'll talk with you again soon.
You're welcome, Chip.
All right. That is Dr. Jim Smith, swine nutritionist with Kent Feeds. Good conversation there. It's amazing what they can do, isn't it, Davis?
It really is, just with the ration.
Yeah, yeah, it's fascinating to me. All right, we're going to continue Pork Week this afternoon. In the second hour of AgriTalk, we've got Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson from Pro Farmer. And tomorrow morning, Farmer Forum, man, this is going to be fun. A.V. Roth, president of the National Pork Producers Council, and Randy Francis right here on AgriTalk.